Blog Talk Radio.
Compassion Dakini. For tonight, we have Dr. Teresa Hoffer, who will be joining us tonight. We'll be talking about medical anthropology, medical history, and all of the above about health, wellness, and compassion. So, Teresa, can you say hello to our listeners, please? Okay, Teresa is not online with us. Her call just dropped. So hopefully she will call us back. Hello, this is Kim with Compassion Dakini.
Hello, this is Theresia here.
Hi there, welcome back.
Yes, here I am.
Okay, I just introduced you, and can you just tell us a little bit about what you do, who you are?
Of course. First of all, hello to everybody. It's a great opportunity to be able to talk to you all and get some interesting questions from Kim. So my name is Theresia. I'm originally from Austria, but I haven't lived there in many years. And I work as an anthropologist, currently in Norway, but I also sometimes come to New York, to New York City, because I work as a curator for one of the museums over here. My background was in a way very fortunate. I was born into a very creative, extended family, many people around, all people doing creative stuff of one sort or another, and especially important to my future career and future development in my life was that people had traveled a lot, especially my aunt and my father and other people in the family had really traveled to lots of places. And they brought back with them very many beautiful and interesting objects which were standing around. And they had so many stories attached to this. And I think it was these stories that made me so interested to go out there myself and discover beautiful things and people out there in the world, and which really shaped this wish of mine to become an anthropologist. And I think I made up my mind to become an anthropologist when I was 14. And since then, I went to, finish my education in various universities, did a master's degree in social anthropology in Austria, and then went to do another master's degree in England on medical anthropology. And this really hooked me, and this is what I'm doing since, also doing a PhD and so on. But so I'm working as a medical anthropologist these days in Norway and focus on Tibetan medicine and Tibetan, the Himalayas more broadly.
Okay, so can you tell what is anthropology? It's the study of what?
It's the study of people and how people live together and about differences between how different groups of people live together. And it's basically a study of worldwide cultures. So unlike sociology, which most people know what it is, it's the study of our own society, so European or American society, in contrast to that, anthropology looks at societies and groups of people anywhere in the world, including Europe and America, but all over the place in Asia, Latin America, Australia, Africa.
And part of this show with the Compassion Dakini is we talk a lot about compassion and how to be the change of the world by opening up a heart, finding out our passion, and being healthy and sharing ideas on how one find their spirit and strength to become a better human being, to help serve the world and also do good in the world. Can you share with us some of your experience on history regarding health from different cultures? Just anything from your experience, like what some of the history, like what does health means to you and what is your experience of the whole history of health and how did it get started with medicine and the field of medical anthropology? I know it's a lot of questions, so you just pick whatever your heart's desire.
Okay, well, I think first of all, it's very, very important that we work towards a better world and towards a more compassionate world, and that we work for more health in the world, both for ourselves but also everybody around us. I think it's a very important thing to remember in our day-to-day life. And I think depending on what professions we carry out, we have various different opportunities to work on that ideal, both within ourselves but also in society. And one of the things that I've noticed in academia is that a lot of people are doing their jobs and they get very, very stressed doing their jobs. Of course, there are a lot of things you have to do, a lot of responsibilities. But at the same time, I think we can only function very well and healthily if we ourselves work with a calm mind. And a calm mind, I think, really is the basis for compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's one of the things that is important to me is to bring this kind of attitude that we want to work in a calm way and we want to spread this ideal to work for a better world into academia and work together with colleagues and students and colleagues abroad together to achieve this aim. So I don't see academia as something that is completely sort of lofty and away from the real world and the concerns of people, but it is mm-hmm. something that should engage very much with the reality of different peoples around the world. And so we really have the obligation, I think, to do research that is helpful for people around the world and that can be of use and direct, has a direct impact for a better world.
I see.
And in a way, it's something that brought me from more general anthropology to medical anthropology because I really was very attracted to engage more deeply with the subject, what does it actually mean, health, and what is illness, and how do different cultures understand this differently. And I think it's very helpful to look at certain things, how other people do it, how other cultures deal with it, because we can get inspiration for ourselves also, because things don't have to be the way they are in our home place. We mm-hmm. have many options. And those many, many options are out there in the world, and we can go and seek those out, learn about them, and if we find something useful, we can also try and try it out in our own life, no matter where we live.
So what do you find it useful in your experience and in your studies and in your research? How is health really defined in the traditional ethnic medicine?
Okay, so there are many, many different definitions in different traditional medicines around the world. But what I've kind of engaged with most deeply so far is the traditional medical system that is called Tibetan medicine. So it's a medicine that is indigenous to the Tibetan plateau, and the Tibetans call it Tsowa Rigpa, which actually means the science or the art of healing.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't really have the word medicine in there, but it has the word healing in there.
Okay.
So it's a process rather than a sort of system in that sense. And one of the beautiful things in this understanding, in this Tibetan medical understanding of health and illness, is that, of course, there is no separation between the body and the mind and the heart. And this is something that was instituted in Europe by René Descartes to make this split between mind and body, the philosopher, the French philosopher. But this kind of same split didn't happen in Tibetan medicine. And in a world where we're trying to tackle our problems and our issues from many different angles, it can be a very useful way.
Uh-huh. Okay. Teresa, are you still there? Okay, so she was talking about health and medicine and how the Westerners and the Eastern are bringing it together regarding health. So it's really interesting because in my background, I also work with health, healing, illnesses, and different types of diseases. And one of the things that I have realized is, oh, she's back on. Hold on, ladies and gentlemen. Here she is. Teresa.
Thank you very much. About that. I'm not sure why this is happening. I'm very sorry about that. But
And by the way, Teresa is in New York City right now in a very nice area where it's a lot of stuff is happening, a lot of energies of moving and hop, shuttle, everything, all of them. She's in New York City. So, all right, Teresa, please continue.
Okay, so, yeah, well, basically we were talking about this idea of the three humors, and these humors are influenced by various different things. For example, what we eat every day, what we do, what we think, our emotions, our environment, our social environment. These are all influencing our humors. And Tibetan medicine has this idea that everybody is born with a particular constellation of these so-called humors in the body. So you have this so-called constitution from birth. So, for example, I have a wind bile constitution, you can say. And that you can find out, that a medical doctor can find this out very easily. And it's very helpful to know this constitution because then you can take care of the things that you eat, that you do, that you drink, some of the activities that you do, which should be in line with this constitution. So, for example, a windy person or a very wind-bile constitution person is somebody who moves around very fast, thinks very quickly, and so on. So if you, for example, if I drink a lot of coffee on top of this, of course, everything gets speeded up.
Uh-huh.
So the wind, in a way that already is in my constitution, through the things that I eat or drink or talk or say, gets aggravated. So it's a problem. But then if it develops over a longer period of time, certain so-called wind symptoms might show up, and certain wind diseases, of which there are many, many of them, are defined in the medical text, may have an easier chance to develop. So it's very good if we can learn more about ourselves, what is actually, what are the things that we like to eat, what is good for us, to really pay attention and then figure out when these are not really in accordance with what is good for us to change.
Mm-hmm.
And then our mental attitude, for example.
Yes. And how important is having a positive thinking and letting things go and not be so negative. How is that affecting the humor, do you think?
Oh, it's very, very important that to have a very positive attitude as much as you can to develop that, because all those humors are also linked in the very in a very distant way to what the Buddha has called, or what Buddhism calls, the so-called three poisons of the mind, which are ignorance, hatred, and desire. And so it's good to avoid all of these related emotions, thoughts, and so on. And what can counter these three mental poisons is wisdom, develop wisdom and insight, develop compassion to counter anger, and develop a calm mind to calm down the desire that is related to wind. So the humors are related to these kinds of mental and emotional attitudes. So we have a lot of influence over them. And as many people have probably found out for themselves, but what is also a core of the Buddha's teaching, mind matters most. Everything starts in the mind. So you first of all get to know better your mind and explore your mind and develop your mind in a positive way. And what follows is also good health and prosperity.
And that brought me to the next question in one of our chat person. How is medicine, as far as plants and herbs, are used in Tibetan medicine? From your research and from your experience, what did you find, like, as far as plants and how do they use plants and special herbs?
There are hundreds and hundreds of plants that are used in Tibetan medicine. They are still collected on the Tibetan plateau by knowledgeable people, by village people who get just taught by the local doctor. And some people still have the knowledge to compound these different herbs together into a Tibetan medical pill or into a powder. And Tibetan medicines, as such, always contain many ingredients. So you never have just a single ingredient. You have at least three, but most often between 5 and 35 ingredients. So they're always multi-compound drugs. And the reason for that is that some of those ingredients might be very strong. You know, they might have a very strong effect, but because you also have these other herbs in there, they counter the very strong effect to overall give a smoother and more rounded effect of the medicine. And there are hundreds of Tibetan medicines, but normally a Tibetan medical doctor would have between 60 and 90 different Tibetan medicines in his or her house. And in some of the hospitals, they have a larger variety of medicines available.
And another question came up is, what is the difference between Chinese medicine and Tibetan medicine?
So, there are a lot of differences. The only really overlapping thing that both Chinese and Tibetan medicine have is the use of pulse diagnosis. So Tibetan pulse diagnosis is quite heavily influenced from Chinese pulse diagnosis, because some of these texts that describe and elaborate on pulse diagnosis came to Tibet from China between the 9th and the 12th century and were translated into Tibetan, and they gave inspiration to Tibetans to learn this technique. But the core foundations of Tibetan medicine are actually to be found in India and in the classical Ayurvedic system, where they also have this idea of the so-called three humors of wind, bile, and phlegm. They call it the three dosha. So they have vata, kapha, and that's sort of the correlate. So theoretically, the roots of Tibetan medicine are more to be found in India, but in terms of diagnosis, Tibetan medical doctors were influenced from China, but also from Persia, for example, where people came to Tibet and they brought with them the technique of urine diagnosis, which was also something that's been used for over the last centuries. And it's still sometimes used today.
And then from also, this is brings us up into another interesting point. And there are a lot of Western medicines that is, when you go see doctors especially, they don't have a lot of time to spend with their patients compared to most naturopath, where we find the person, we interview them, and we listen to their pulses. So can you talk to us how policymakers, how people who are more knowledgeable as far as health should maybe look into an alternative type of medicine, and how can this be beneficial in the long run for our society or environment?
Okay. I mean, I think there is, in a way, within governmental healthcare systems and also other healthcare systems around the world, there is often a limitation of time. So that, in some cases, is quite okay, in particular if the doctor is very, very experienced. So, for example, one of the doctors I worked with in Tibet, he was 72 years old at the time, and I spent many, many weekends and several weeks with him during 1 year. And so I got to know him very well, and we also went on a three-week tour to remote areas in Tibet to provide healthcare to people who can't afford it or who don't have a knowledgeable.
Teresa? Can you still hear me, Teresa? Okay. And she is in New York City. There's a lot of energy that is happening around there, and hopefully she'll call back and finish her story. So for the callers out there who want to participate in our on-air discussion regarding medical anthropology, Tibetan medicine, and alternative medicine, please give us a call at 347-637-3220. The number is 347-637-3220. And hopefully Teresa will call us back and let us know the rest of her story. Now I'm kind of excited to find out what she found out of, with her experience with working this great Tibetan medicine. Here she is. And Teresa, you're back. Yay!
Yes, I'm going to give you the rest of the story. But the fascinating thing was that this doctor was able to see some patients for only 2-3 minutes. But it was incredible what he could find out in this very short period of time and how satisfied patients left him.
Uh-huh.
And I think that is because it depends on the quality of the doctor. You know, you have to be able to make a very warm connection with the patient. And that is helped in Tibetan medicine by actually reading the pulse on both arms. So you actually, the physician touches both arms, radial artery of the patient.
Uh-huh.
So that gives a human connection between the physician and the patient. So even if you meet very short, so this is for all the people who work in a Western healthcare system, is even if there is a very short time available, make sure you make a human warm connection to the patient. And what the doctor always used to tell me is you have to think yourself into the place of the patient. If you would be now this patient opposite you, what would you really need to get better, to get healthy again?
Uh-huh.
So this is something I think that we should be bearing in mind. And on a larger political, social, economic level, I think it's very important to focus on the good things that people are already doing for themselves and for others, and to encourage them to do more of that.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, I think to spread the knowledge of things that are good generally, you know, for people in terms of health, nutrition, behavior, mental thinking. And there are a number of things that we can all do very, maybe not so easily because we're stuck in our habits, but it's something we can train ourselves. Basically, human beings can learn anything, good or bad. And of course, we want to learn the good things in life.
Exactly. So then that brings us into the question that I always ask all my guests. What is your definition of compassion?
For me, this means to feel an open and warm heart towards all beings, and that includes ourselves.
And can you share with us a story of your experience of seeing compassion in action?
There are many stories. I think maybe one of them was I shouldn't maybe talk about myself in this case, but it was something I thought was very it just instantly came to me that I was in Burma.
Uh-huh.
And I was walking up those steps to a monastery. And there were a lot of steps, so I was walking up, and there was a whole litter of cats, tiny little kittens.
Uh-huh.
And they had no mummy. So there were about 6 or 7 of them, and they were all completely dirty and sort of flopping on each other, and they were so weak they could hardly walk.
Uh-huh.
So usual playful puppies, you know, that or playful kittens, you know, that we kind of want to see or that we usually see in the West, but they were very weak. And I don't know, I just, you know, I could have just walked on, I guess. And, you know, people coming from the West, they think, oh, they're dirty and whatever, you know, if you get in touch with them, maybe there are some problems or whatever. But I went and bought some biscuits at the next door shop and started feeding those biscuits with water to the cats. And it was a very satisfying thing to do. And who knows what happened with them afterwards. But I think there are so many things, you know, we have the choice. We think, okay, do we just walk on with this homeless person or with this suffering, you know, cat or, you know, a person who isn't well? Or do we stop? And I think we should stop more often.
Oh, Teresa, that is such a beautiful story. I'm going to cry. Wow, that's really pretty, beautiful. Wow. Okay.
I think another story. If you want to hear a story about compassion, then maybe we should continue with this beautiful teacher and doctor who I've been working with in Tibet.
You know, yes, please.
Compassion to actually, at the age of 72, put yourself into various vehicles and go to the very remote countryside of Tibet and drive around for hours. And then see 120, 150 patients a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, how many doctors, you know, retire and then they go on nice fancy holidays and so on? That's
great.
Everybody should go enjoy themselves. But I think we also have to be aware of what are our skills and what are our potentials. What can we do? Because life is short. And the wonderful thing about compassion and about doing good things in life is that they make you feel good yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to do more of them. And this is the attitude I think that we should cultivate more. The more we do good things, the more we find out that they actually make ourselves happy. Not only other people, but also ourselves. Immediately.
Yes. Wow. Thank you for sharing that story. And can you tell us a little bit the upcoming event and why you're in New York? Because you're setting up for the Rubin Museum that with traditional Tibetan medicine. When is that happening? And then how do people all over the world, if they want to go and check out this museum, when does it start?
Yeah, so the museum is in the middle of New York, on the corner of 7th Avenue and 17th Street. It's a museum dedicated to the Himalayan art and Asian art. It's got 6 floors. It's full of beautiful Buddhist, Hindu, other kinds of art, also some modern art from Asia. It has a cafe on the ground floor, and it has an exhibition space for photography. It's a beautiful place. If people don't know it, do come and visit. It's well worth a visit. Bring your friends. Have a nice day out. It has a bookshop where you can buy beautiful books about the exhibitions, about religions, about food, about all sorts of things. And they have several more permanent and some more temporary exhibitions. And one of the exhibitions that is upcoming in 2014 to celebrate the 10-year anniversary of this museum is going to be dedicated to Tibetan medicine.
So wow.
Welcome to come and see this show. And, of course, there will also be associated events, film screenings, talks, publications, and so on. So do look out. And the website for them, I think, is www.rma.org, I think. But it's the Rubin Museum of Art in New York. You'll find it.
Beautiful. And then I have one last question, okay? So if you had all the money in the world and you and all the great leaders come to you and says, you are such a compassionate, educated woman. Tell us, what policy or what rules or what would you do? What do you recommend that we should do to bring more love, light, compassion to the world? What would your motto be?
I think for this, you don't need very much money at all. I think what I would suggest or advise to do is for people to learn how to be still and understand themselves better and to calm their minds, because a calm mind is the basis for love and compassion. It's so much easier when we have a calm mind. And I think it's so beautiful when you can discover this calm.
Uh-huh. And so Let's learn how to discover our calm mind. And thank you so much. Thank you so much, Teresa, for joining us tonight. And for all of you who have participated and joined us in our talk for tonight, I greatly appreciate it to all the people who are on the chat and asking the questions. And thank you so much, Teresa, for joining our show and teaching us and educating us regarding compassion. And compassion begins with oneself. So if you want to be the change of the world, find what health means to you. Find a calm mind, find peace and happiness, and find love and harmony in all your days. So this is Kim with Compassion Dakini. I really hope you have a wonderful day. And if you're in New York City, have a great evening. If you are in the West Coast, have an awesome afternoon. And if you're like many of us in Europe, have a great night. Sweet dreams. Good night. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Teresa.